Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday and Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government. The topics to talk about, including from the legislature's an extensive review of Sullivan County's child welfare policies and procedures. It's a final report. We'll hear more. Plus, a view from the bridge. Members of the community have been gathering on the Narrowsburg Bridge since October, calling for peace in Gaza. Radio Catskills' Rosie Starr went to the bridge to hear some of those voices, and we'll bring them to you. And for those ready to take the plunge, the 2024 Orange County Polar Plunge is here tomorrow. Attendees from across New York State will gather to raise funds and awareness for Special Olympics New York athletes. We'll learn more. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President-elect Donald Trump has named his first top aide. His campaign manager, Susie Wiles, will be his White House chief of staff. She will be the first woman to hold the job. There's interest in what Trump has promised to do immediately when he takes office. He has vowed to deport millions of migrants who are in the U.S. illegally. NPR's Franco Ordonez says that action may face obstacles.
There are so many operational and legal challenges here. It would take a huge investment in resources, manpower, to deport millions of people. I will note, Trump tweaked his language a bit in the last few weeks. He added, quote, criminals. It's the mass deportation of criminals. That is a key distinction that does give him some flexibility.
NPR's Franco Ordonez reporting. Some congressional races remain too close to call. That means it's still not yet clear which party will control the House of Representatives. Republicans have flipped control of the Senate and will hold at least 53 seats. Senate races in Arizona and Nevada have not yet been called. The Dutch prime minister says calm has been restored in Amsterdam after violent attacks on Israeli citizens. The city's mayor says there is no excuse. These occurred at the end of a soccer match. Terry Schultz reports several people were hospitalized and dozens were arrested.
Dutch Prime Minister Dick Schoof says he's horrified by the anti-Semitic attacks on Israeli citizens, which broke out after a soccer match between Israeli and Dutch teams. Prime Minister Schoof says the situation is calm now and that perpetrators will be found and prosecuted. Dozens of people have already been arrested. European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen says she's outraged by last night's vile attacks targeting Israeli citizens in Amsterdam. Anti-Semitism has absolutely no place in Europe, she says. The Israeli Foreign Ministry urges citizens in Amsterdam to stay in their hotels and is asking the Dutch government to help get them to the airport safely. Local media report the number of flights scheduled to leave Amsterdam for Tel Aviv has been tripled. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz.
Stocks opened higher this morning, adding to big gains earlier in the week. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average grew more than 160 points in early trading.
It's going to be a little bit cheaper to borrow money to buy a car, grow a business, or carry a balance on your credit card. The Federal Reserve just cut short-term interest rates by a quarter percentage point. It's the second rate cut this fall and signals progress in the central bank's battle against inflation. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell told reporters Thursday he and his colleagues think the economy is in a good place, although Powell acknowledged the lingering pain of high prices. While short-term interest rates are falling, long-term borrowing costs have been creeping up for the last 6 weeks. Mortgage giant Freddie Mac says the average interest rate on a 30-year home loan rose to nearly 6.8%. That's still lower than this time last year when mortgage rates were averaging 7.5%. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR. Some voters in Iowa have elected the first openly transgender member of that state's legislature. Iowa Public Radio's Grant Gerlach reports.
Amy Wickendall is the first transgender representative elected to the Iowa House of Representatives. The 44-year-old Democrat from eastern Iowa says she hopes to use her position in the state house in part to protect LGBTQ rights.
I will do whatever I can to work across the aisle, but I will also push back when the ideas do threaten the livelihoods and freedoms of our citizens.
In recent years, Iowa's Republican-controlled legislature has banned gender-affirming care for minors and prohibited transgender students from playing in girls' and women's sports. Wickendall's milestone was a notable victory for Iowa Democrats in what was overall a strong election for Republicans who grew their majorities in the state House and Senate. For NPR News, I'm Grant Gerlach.
The mayor of San Francisco, London Breed, has conceded the city's mayoral election to challenger Daniel Lurie.
I called Daniel Lurie earlier today to congratulate him and made it very clear that my team and I stand ready to support him during his transition.
Both Lurie and Breed are Democrats. The Associated Press has not yet called that election. The AP says the city uses ranked voting to determine a winner, and tens of thousands of ballots have not yet been counted. Lurie founded an anti-poverty nonprofit. He is an heir to Levi Strauss. The National Hurricane Center says Hurricane Rafael is a powerful Category 3 storm in the Gulf of Mexico. Forecasters say it will drift in the Gulf for a few days and then slowly lose strength. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Charles Schwab, offering investors choices like full-service wealth management, advice, investing, and trading on Thinkorswim. Learn more at schwab.com. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Friday, and Dan Hoost is here. He's the communications director for Sullivan County Government. Hello.
Hello. Should have the microphone in front of my face.
There you go. Yes, we're going to talk. Before we talk, I should let the listeners know that I misspoke at the beginning of the billboard there before the news, where I said we were going to talk about this report with child welfare. We actually already talked about that because I was reading from an old list of topics we were supposed to talk about. Just so folks know, a consultant did report on the review of child welfare in the county and welfare policies, and that the legislators heard that in mid-October. So that is available on the website, sullivanny.gov. But we have a whole list of other things we're going to talk about today, including Election Day. It's been a long week, but how did things go for the Board of Elections during this election?
Very well. I talked with our election commissioners yesterday, Deanna Reich and Lori Benjamin, and they said, overall, except for a few glitches here and there, things went very well. They were pleased. The turnout, of course, was large. We, I think, are around 32,000 people so far, but that doesn't include the absentee ballots, some of which are still being counted. In fact, I think absentee ballots, not just in Sullivan County, but elsewhere, are going to determine that Mark Molinaro-Josh Riley race as to who the final winner is there.
Yeah. Mark Molinaro has not conceded the race yet,
right,
though some have called the race for Josh Riley at this point. So.
Right. It tends to be Democrats are more the absentee voters than Republicans, so I can see why they did that. But our Board of Elections certainly isn't certified any results yet. It's not considering any results official. So everything you will see on the county website under results, and you should take a look at it, it's interesting. Those are unofficial results. It'll be a few weeks before results are certified and thus made official.
And how was turnout?
Like I said, we had around 32,000 people. I imagine with absentees, we may make it up to what we had last presidential election, which was about 35,000 votes. I'm hoping so, because it's great when we have so many people turn out. I wish it was that way every November. But of course, the presidential election bring more people out than not. Our early voting was the real star, because I think people have become more understanding and more comfortable with early voting. Of course, we also have two locations instead of one that were open for early voting, and we averaged about a little over 1,000 people a day using early voting. The government center was wonderfully busy. It was a pleasure to see that many people coming in and participating in democracy.
And in terms of, you know, how the process went, you mentioned maybe a few glitches, but no safety concerns, no issues there.
Nope. And if we had any issues where people, we didn't have their names in the system or whatever, they still were given an affidavit ballot to vote. And then our Board of Elections does their due diligence and research to see if that vote is actually going to count. And that's another reason why results are as yet unofficial. I want to mention, too, the results are really interesting. We went with a new system, our IT folks did, and I give them kudos on this. I looked at the results. It used to be just sort of a plain Jane list that we had. If you look at it now, you can look at results. If you click on view results by election district,
yeah,
on any of the races, you can see very micro level detail about how people voted in Sullivan County, where there was more Republican popularity versus Democratic popularity. It sort of confirms what I had sort of an on-the-ground knowledge of Sullivan County, but it is very interesting. For example, town of Delaware, the western side, which is the election district, I can't remember, one or two in Delaware, includes Calicoon, that trended Democratic. The eastern side, which is like Cadoosa Lake, and that area trended Republican. And those kinds of things are fascinating to look at if you are, like me, somebody who fancies themselves an amateur political scientist.
Well, you know, I have to say, when we here were prepping for election night, we looked at your website and thought, oh, wow, they've made great improvements here. So great.
Isn't it something?
Yeah, no, it's really good. And I think people may be used to seeing some of things like this when they're looking at some of these other places that report out. And so it was nice to see that here at the county government level, and it gave us an insight into what's going on. We'll give listeners insight into where things where people voted and how.
Yeah.
And it goes all the way through all of the towns in Sullivan County, all the way up to the presidential level. Let's talk about legislature. Housing Trust Fund is getting fleshed out. We've talked about that before. What's the latest on that?
Well, there was a fairly lively debate yesterday between legislators as to what kind of affordable housing, but it was made clear that we're not talking about Section 8 housing or even necessarily low-income housing. We're talking about middle-income workforce housing is what the legislature by and large agrees on, and that is what the direction they gave to our planning commissioner, Heather Brown, to go back to Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress, which is the one that created was our consultant and created a study and a report, which is available on the planning page on our website to take a look at, and say to them, okay, we are dedicating in 2025 $2 million to the housing crisis in Sullivan County. Let's set that up to incentivize people who are going to rehab existing buildings and create affordable middle-income or even low-income housing, but not Section 8 housing, so that we don't risk having more buildings fall into dilapidated states here, and we can actually move people into facilities we already have. And of course, I think planning agrees with that approach because we're also at the same time doing a water resource study. And there is concern in various parts of the county, and I think there's been building moratoriums too, because of our water resources. Are we literally tapping ourselves out? And we've got to be careful about that. But if you're rehabbing a building that already had a well or existing hookups to municipal water services, then you're not really taxing the system that much more. And so that's where I think we're going to go. And hopefully in a few months, we're going to have, when we get into 25, actual guidelines for what developers and even individuals who want to rehab single-family or multifamily dwellings, they'll find incentivization to do so.
When would that happen in terms of timeline?
That I'm not exactly sure, except that we have this money set to be spent in 2025. So I know it's a top priority for planning. So I would guess by the first or second quarter of 2025, we will have a program that I can come back on here and talk about.
In other planning news, some money set aside to develop a comprehensive bike and pedestrian master plan.
Yeah, this is cool. This has actually been in the works for a few years, but the legislature in committee yesterday, they have to do it in full board in 2 weeks, but I'm sure they will be committing $200,000, of which half of that will be reimbursed by the state, to get a consultant to develop a comprehensive bicycle and pedestrian master plan. It is a plan that we've been thinking about for, I think, probably 2 years, but now we're going to have a consultant actually flesh it out in an official way. It's going to be the Metropolitan Urban Design Workshop, and it will determine where best we can create more bike paths, more pedestrian paths along existing rights of way, not cutting something through the forest kind of thing. You know, it's going to be a master plan that helps us also identify where we might need to put in some maintenance or renew some existing paths.
Are these roadways or a combination of roadways and other land paths?
Yeah, the land paths as well. But like the East Broadway has, it was required by the federal grant that we got, has a bike lane once we repaved it last year, there's a bike lane involved. Doesn't really connect anywhere else. So what are we going to do with that bike lane? How do we extend it further? What is the master plan for that and the rest of Sullivan County? So it's pretty exciting. I think it is in line with Sullivan County being a popular place for people to hike and bike. I see a lot of bicycles out. Even the other day, on a cold day, I saw somebody bicycling along a county road. And if that's what people want, then we need to make sure that we are keeping things, signage clear, pathways maintained, maybe putting in bike lanes on roads that didn't have them before. That's what this master plan is going to look at.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Dan Hoost. He's the communications director for the Sullivan County government. Joins us every Friday with a report from Monticello. A report about unemployment. The latest figures from September show a pretty low unemployment rate in the county.
Yes, lowest ever. Our Community Resources Commissioner, Laura Quigley, who oversees our Center for Workforce Development, she mentioned that caught my ear when she was talking about it during legislature yesterday, that we are at 2.8% unemployment. That is our lowest September rate since numbers began being tracked in 1990. So we're talking about almost 35 years ago. And frankly, that's a really low number for any month of the year. But I tell people, we're talking about September. That's post-summer season that we have that low unemployment rate. So I'm really interested and excited to see how low that's going to stay during what's called our off-season, because I'm not so sure that we're going to have an off-season to the degree we used to have for at least this year, if not going on further.
But it's below the national numbers, too, because that's around 4.1%, according to latest numbers. They have them in October. We get them a little later. It's the latest in September. What do you attribute that to?
Well, Sullivan County has been leading the state for almost 3 years now in job growth. We have been within the top five, sometimes number one, number two, number three, but always within the top five every month since, I think, late 2021. So there is work to be found here. And if people want to work, there are jobs, entry-level jobs, not just skilled jobs. And, of course, it's something we're always paying attention to with our Center for Workforce Development. They've been very busy every week. They have an in-house hiring event, which is not just for our local businesses, but also for the county, because we always have open positions. So Sullivan County is in an enviable position compared to the rest of upstate. And even to some degree, I think Bronx and New York City has the highest unemployment rate. But that's a little different, too, because it's comparing urban to a much more rural. Comparing us to our rural counterparts upstate, we're doing better than anyone except maybe Allegheny County out west on the western side of the state. So.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on Route 17. There's a public hearing coming up. This is part of this Route 17 enhancement initiative at the state level with the New York State Department of Transportation. There's a public hearing coming up regarding just one of the exits here, exit 114.
Right.
Let's talk about that.
Although it's been the most controversial because the DOT has proposed in the past to eliminate that exit. For those who are unfamiliar, you've passed it before. You may not have used it unless you're from Wurtsboro or going to Wurtsboro, but it is a westbound only exit. That means you're coming, say, from Middletown to Monticello. It's at the very top of the hill through the cut on Wurtsboro Mountain there. All it is an exit ramp off to Old 17. There is no entrance ramp, and there's nothing on the eastbound side whatsoever. There wasn't a place to put anything. That exit, in the DOT's mind, might complicate us getting Interstate 86 designation, so they were talking about eliminating it. Well, the community said, no way. We can't do that. You're going to not only inconvenience the people who use that to get to their homes and businesses, but you're going to damage the downtown business district of Wurtsboro, because a lot of people, according to their research, use that exit to then go down the hill on Old 17 around the hairpin curve and onto Sullivan Street, which is Wurtsboro's main business district. So this is something that the DOT has recognized, and they are going to be having this public open house on November 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Chase Elementary School in Wurtsboro. That's on, of all things, Pennsylvania Avenue in Wurtsboro. It's going to be an open house rather than really a formal presentation. It means you're going to get a chance to walk right up to the DOT officials and talk to them, ask questions, give comments. They are there to listen. You know, don't go all adversarial and, wanting to verbally beat anyone up, but talk to them honestly and candidly about your feelings about exit 114, either way, whether you agree or disagree with its closure, because I think this is going to play a key role in what they decide to do in the future.
Well, and this is part of the larger widening project of Route 17, which is also controversial, but they're focused in this hearing specifically on exit 114.
Yes. Yeah. And the widening project, I don't know how much it's been explained, but it seems that that has been, that's going to stop at exit 113 at this point, which if you look at 17, it's already triple laned in Sullivan County from the Orange County border to 113. So I think the widening project has sort of dropped off the radar for Sullivan County. There's just not much. I don't think the DOT looks to widen it any further. Orange County is where it's going to be a big issue and continues to be a big issue.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back with more from Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, including what's going on for Veterans Day. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
This week on Science Friday, why blood pressure readings are so inaccurate and what that could mean.
Studies have shown that you can overestimate your blood pressure by 5 to even 30 millimeters of mercury.
And a new winner in the prime numbers race, over 40 million digits.
A trillion is a decently big number, but that's only 13 digits long.
That's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're joined by Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. And a reminder that Monday is Veterans Day. Government offices are closed, but there's some events commemorating our armed forces members.
Yeah, there's actually quite a range of events starting today, actually.
Yeah.
In Hurleyville at 2 p.m., there'll be a service at Morningside Park. I believe the town of Fallsburg is involved in that. Then, again, in the town of Fallsburg, tomorrow at 1 p.m., Woodburn's going to have their very popular parade, their 26th annual. And then Monday, there are over a dozen different events, I believe, including two in Monticello, two in Wurtsboro at different times on Veterans Day. I remind people Memorial Day is about our deceased veterans. Veterans Day is about those who are still with us. So this is a special opportunity not only for you to go and show how much you care, but to walk up to these people and say thank you, or at least show them some appreciation, because they're going to be there looking for you.
And there's a special commemoration at the Government Center and Courthouse being lit up as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have partnered with the New York State Association of Counties and the National Association of Counties, which is doing this across the nation for Operation Green Light. Those green lights that you see that have been like on people's front porches in honor of veterans. Well, we just purchased a whole new set of exterior lights, multicolored lights, and we are honored to kick them off with Operation Green Light. So you'll see the Government Center and Courthouse are lit up at night in green. And then in the future, actually, I think we're going to see some other lighting for it for specific holidays and observances. It turns out the Government Center and the Courthouse both used to have exterior floodlights that shone on the building. They were just white. And over time, those got removed or replaced. But now we're sort of doing what I call the Empire State Building approach, which is to be able to light up these buildings in appropriate colors at appropriate times. It's not going to be a free-for-all where you're going to see, you know, some Vegas-style light thing going on. There's a policy actually being developed. But we are pleased to say the very first, and I think appropriately so, use of these lights is for the veterans with the green shining on them. It is for them.
And the Drug Task Force is hosting a community meeting for the public coming up at the Liberty Senior Center. What are they looking to hear from folks at this meeting?
Well, I think the primary thing is to actually have people be able to see what they're doing, because they're going to conduct business there, and they'll see that each of the pillars, as they call them, I believe, are going to report on what they've been up to. Because, of course, the drug crisis is still with us. It is a very big issue. It switches from fentanyl to, I think the latest right now is cocaine has come back again. It continues to claim lives. A lot of people deal with overdoses. But then there's a lot of people, too, who are dealing with it in their families, even though they aren't addicted to a substance themselves. So this has been a very good experience for the public in the past, sometimes a cathartic one. Certainly helpful for the Drug Task Force, too, to hear from people about, could you focus more on this? Or I have a question about this. Where are the resources for this? So that's going to be happening on November 22nd at 2 p.m. at the Liberty Senior Center. That's on North Main Street. Right across, I think, from the town hall. And again, 2 p.m. on the 22nd, we encourage everyone to show up for that, because it really does take a community to beat back this scourge.
And they recently, I guess last year, added a few more of these pillars to their mm-hmm. task force. Has this strategy proven to be successful?
I think they would say so. I feel like it is, too. Obviously, we're still dealing with very high drug use numbers, but that is not unique to Sullivan County. And we certainly can't sit by and just let that wave sweep over us. So I would say it is working. But what I've done, I've gone to these meetings myself, and I've learned a lot just from sitting there. And when I say cathartic, it makes you feel like, oh, good, people are focusing on this. I'm not alone in trying to find solutions to these kinds of things. It really helps people feel like they are part of a larger effort to do something really good in their community.
And another certification class from the county, helping folks get trained for some needed areas of the job force, workforce, security guard certification.
Yeah, this is part of our Center for Workforce Development's ongoing partnership with local organizations and businesses. Like we've done construction trades and welding at BOCES. Well, this time we are partnering with EEA Security in Liberty. We are going to be doing security guard certification at no cost to those who want to learn it. It will be paid for through funding our Center for Workforce Development already has. You have to be 18 plus and a resident of Sullivan County, preferably have a high school diploma or GED, but notably that is not required. You must have a valid state driver's license, reliable transportation, and of course pass a background check and drug test, because you'll be a security guard. Classes start December 2nd and just go through the middle of December. It's a very short class, but they're Monday through Friday every day at this EEA Security in Liberty. And we want you to be ready, willing, and able to work and accept a full-time position upon completion of the course, because those positions are out there. So limited seating available. Give a call to our Center for Workforce Development. That's 845-794-3340, 794-3340. If you're interested, call them today. Don't wait.
We've mentioned this before. I want to remind folks that the Home Energy Assistance Program season has kicked off, more commonly known as HEAP. Mm-hmm. Where can folks get more information about what's available to them for home energy?
It's on our assistance website, but the thing I tell people, if you have any questions, we've got a great HEAP team ready to answer your questions. 845-807-0142. They are located in our social services complex in Liberty, and you may qualify even though you think you don't. One of the things that we've stressed here is, even if you have stocks, mutual funds, that kind of thing, the state is only interested in the income that you are getting on a weekly or a daily basis. Any other kind of income doesn't count. So you may be eligible for several hundred dollars worth of free fuel deliveries to get you started this winter. And that can help a lot of people.
And in-person applications are accepted at the Office for the Aging, mm-hmm. the Department of Social Services. Also, applications can be obtained from the county's community partners, mm-hmm. Action Toward Independence, Independent Living, and again, the Sullivan County Office for the Aging. Ask that you call first, though, before heading over, I guess.
Yes.
Also, before we go, want to mention something that you and I always talk about is heartwarming, and something we probably need to hear at the end of this week is a new citizen sworn in at the courthouse on Wednesday.
Yes, we had 21 sworn in. More views than I've ever seen for this short little video I post of every naturalization ceremony where they take their oaths of allegiance to America. People just loved it. I think it has to do with just how polarizing and difficult the election day and everything leading up to it has been. No matter what side of the fence you're on with all of this, everyone can agree these folks worked hard, deserved to become new citizens, and it was so meaningful and emotional to watch them get what their heart has desired possibly for many decades, because we had people of all ethnicities, all ages, all kinds of backgrounds. What I really loved is, I don't know how it got started. Typically, I just take photos of them getting their certificate from County Clerk Russell Reeves and our County Court, Supreme Court Judge Megan Galligan. But this time they brought their families up with them. So we had all sorts of kids and husbands and wives and partners and just family that was joyous about this happening with their loved one. So it makes you feel really good about being in America, where people very desperately want to be here. And these folks went through the process, which is a very intense process, and succeeded. Congratulations to them.
And that video is still up on the county's Facebook page.
Oh, it's still there. Absolutely.
Well, it's very nice to see. I'm watching it right now. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Something we all need to think about and remember.
Oh, yes.
Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. See you then.
All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, a view from the bridge. This is Radio Chatskill.
On the TED Radio Hour, computer scientist Francis Chance studies how the graceful dragonfly manages to be such a deadly hunter.
We know that they fly to intercept their prey. They fly really fast, and they're very successful.
What AI developers are learning from natural intelligence. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is Jeff Loeffler. Join me each and every Friday, 10 to midnight, as we go deep, playing songs that you don't hear on the radio all the time. It's the Deep End.
Deep End.
Deep
End.
Deep cuts and live tracks from the worlds of classics, psych, prog, jam, and blues rock. The Deep End, each and every Friday night from 10 to midnight, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every weekend since October, members of the community have gathered on the Narrowsburg-Darbytown Bridge calling for peace in Gaza. Our own Radio Catskill's Rosie Starr went there last Saturday to talk to some of the members that are participating in this vigil.
There's no way to peace. Peace is the way.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. It's an early autumn evening, and the sun is going down. I happen to be in Narrowsburg on the Narrowsburg Bridge. I see that there is a small gathering of people here. I see that it says Veterans for Peace. Would you introduce yourself?
My name is Chuck Hine. I am here because I've witnessed war in its worst state, and I know that what's going on in Gaza is just unbelievable. And I'm here to say no more killing. Stop the killing. We can work this out. So that's my pitch. I've been a member of Veterans for Peace for 40 years now.
I was going to say, your hair is gray like mine, so all the years that you've seen wars come and go in our lifetime, do you still have a place in your heart for reconciliation?
I have spent a lot of my last 10 years doing just exactly that, and mainly in the avenue of trying to figure out if there's hope out there. And I think that in the long run, humans are capable of doing the right thing and figuring out how to not have to go to war to settle whatever disputes they may have.
Thank you for your peaceful feelings.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hello.
Hi, Rosie. How are you?
I'm good to see people so vigilant on this Saturday night in autumn, despite all that is going on in the world and all the news. Tell me why you're here at this vigil.
Well, this sign is from the Iraq War that I'm carrying. It says, "No more killing." And I just think what's going on in the Middle East is a tragedy, and war, no matter when, is a tragedy. But in particular, it's like shooting fish in a barrel when you watch what's going on in Gaza. And everybody in that whole area deserves to live in dignity and safety. And so the war has to stop before any of that can begin.
How do you feel standing on the bridge? Why is it important to keep doing this? You do this like weekly. This is a weekly.
Yeah, we came a little bit late to this party. We started to do this, I think, in July or August, and people began this way right after October. 'Cause it reminds people that there's something going on that people are objecting to. And it gives people courage to stand up and say. We sometimes get a lot of honks, and sometimes we get people throwing us the finger, and it's to be a witness. It's a vigil. It's to be a witness to the tragedy that's going on.
I noticed that your sign is in red, white, and blue.
That's not an accident. Well, you know, sometimes you feel like somebody else has hijacked the flag. And I don't like that feeling, because I feel like I'm a patriotic American. And because I disagree with somebody doesn't mean that I'm not a patriotic American.
Thank you for your work. Any drop of peace is a good drop.
Yes, yeah.
And here we have, I believe this is Beverly Sterner, but you could introduce yourself.
None other than, yes.
Hi, Beverly. Thanks for putting the notice out on the Upper Delaware Community Network. Yes. But tell me, it's another Saturday night, and here you stand for over a year now.
Yeah, well, you know, the killing continues, and the death rate goes up, and the United States is supporting it through supporting Israel, continuing to bomb and kill innocent people on their way to whatever victory they consider victory.
Is there any way to look at this in a neutral way to promote your message of peace and vigilance? You're here to stand witness.
I think you'd have to hear some of the testimony of the victims and see the incredible destruction of lives, children's lives, people's lives, lives of innocent. You'd have to see that first.
What does your sign say? I like it. It's in many colors.
It says, "Not in our name." The killing that's happening is not in our name, and it's a Palestinian symbol also on there, the watermelon, which is the Palestinian symbol. And you know, if you allow yourself to hear the incredible suffering of innocent people, I don't know how you can stand away from that. There needs to be some human response to that. I just think our standing here is our human response, that we cannot ignore it. Only when it stops will we stop.
My name is Chris Renault. I live in Coshecton.
Tell me about your signs.
Well, we have one sign over here that says, "Stop Starving Gaza." You know, that's what they're doing. In the northern part of Gaza, you know, the Israelis, the Zionists, are starving them by the day. And apparently it's okay to keep starving them in the United States' eyes, as long as, and, you know, with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and the crew, as long as they're only killing 100 a day, that's okay. Now that they've destroyed everything else. So this says, "No money for genocide." That would be the money that's coming out of our pockets as American taxpayers, buying all the weapons that are burning these children alive. Yeah, that's things, right? And so here we are. We're the people who are protesting against American complicity in the worst massacre of the 21st century. There you are.
Why is this vigil, this weekly vigil, important?
It's been going a year now, a year plus, right? So why is it important? It's like remind people. That's what a vigil is. It's about reminding people that it's here. The genocide continues week by week, and we will continue to remind people week by week. Especially, it's really important that all these people who live in these communities around here, who know better than to allow it to the genocide to continue, people who don't speak up whatsoever, who call themselves, you know, progressive Democrats, they just watch it happen. And there they are. So that's why we have to be out here. That's why it continues.
My name is Dr. Hussein Omar. I've been in Sullivan County anesthesiologist and a pain management for 40 years, and I'm taking care of everybody in the community. And then all of a sudden, during the war, I saw the maiming and the killing of the children and having amputation without anesthesia or painkiller. That's like, it's a crime for humanity. So we have to come in here to show the people there's a crime going on and genocide going on in Gaza, and we have to do something about it. The signs say, hunk for peace. We're here for peace. And my wife, Joanne.
Josie Omar. And I just want to say that peace only comes through diplomacy. This violence, this desecration, killing children, starvation, war crimes, just create more violence, and it's not good.
Well, I see that your sign is written in many languages. Tell me what it says.
We're looking for peace. Hussein is Egyptian Muslim. I'm a Buddhist myself. Our family is Christian, Muslims, and Jews, and we're all working for peace. It's the only way.
Starvation is being used as a weapon of war. And starvation of 2 million people is not a weapon for war. It's not going to bring peace to the Middle East. And you're generating a different generation and another generation of hate.
What would bring peace to the Middle East?
Equality. Equality and justice for the Palestinian people. And for 100 years, they're trying to do it by force and did not work. And the only peace is between Egypt and Israel for 52 years because there is equality in force. They beat us and we beat them. So now they know there's no reason for war. We could talk and we could live. And really there is no anti-Semitism in the Middle East. This is all the Jewish people have to understand that. There is really no anti-Semitism. We have in our community in Egypt Jews. And in Iraq there are Jews. And in Iran there are Jews. It's everywhere. There is really no religion discrimination. It's all just the Zionist issues.
This will end when the world sees Palestinians as human beings. Totally equal human beings. Okay, thank you.
You could see here in the bridge, there's Jews, Muslims, Christian, Buddhist, every religion.
Atheists.
It's everything. It's really everything.
Hello, tell me your name, please.
Myrna Markarian.
Hi, Myrna. Would you like to tell me about your sign? We're standing on the bridge as a vigil for peace.
Well, we're here because this genocide is continuing. Israel has decided that they no longer will allow UNRWA. The Palestinians have had to survive with UNRWA for the past 40 years, which has really saved the Israeli government huge millions and billions of dollars. They are doing this as a deliberate action to starve the people of Gaza. This is a clear genocide that the United Nations, even their own newspapers, Haaretz, has now condemned the Israeli government for what they're doing. It's time for the American public to stand up and say no more. No more money for genocide, no more money for constant war. We want to see this all stop. There's other ways that we should be able to deal with the rest of the world besides bombing them and massive killings of people, of Arabs who apparently have no human rights whatsoever. You know, we've been watching the massacres of people in Libya, in Syria, in Yemen, in Iraq, in Palestine, and it needs to stop. This is a foreign policy that has no outcome that seems to be anything but disastrous, just disastrous. And this is disastrous for the Israeli people as well. You know, we work very closely with Jewish Voices for Peace. We attend their conferences. I'm a member. Some of us are members of Jewish Voices for Peace. We are working tirelessly. The main effort is to pass Bernie Sanders' bill to stop funding Israel, because they're doing nothing but using 1,000-pound bombs on tents with children in them. So I, you know, it's kind of hard to see who's benefiting from this except the military-industrial complex. Our tax money is going to make a lot of billionaires, trillionaires. So we're not really interested in continuing this. Our country needs a lot more infrastructure investment, you know, investment in our own people. Our education system is really just falling to pieces, and our healthcare system is a disaster. I don't know why anybody would support money going overseas at this point. And if this continues, American people should be very aware that they are looking at potentially sending their children overseas in a disastrous world war. And that's what it looks like we're heading towards. You know, this is a very complex issue. It starts with the genocide in Gaza, but it's going to affect every single human being on Earth at this point. So that's about all I have to say.
If you had a mantra to share right now, what would it be?
Let's learn to work together as people. Let's stop allowing all of the powers that be to divide us. Let's unite ourselves.
I'm Susan Sullivan, and I'm here because it's extremely painful what's happening in Gaza, and because these are my friends, and I want to support what Beverly's been doing. And I haven't been here every week, but I'm glad I'm here now.
Mm-hmm. And you have a very colorful sign. What does it say?
It says, "Stop Starving Gaza." And there's also a very excellent article in The New Yorker about the actions against the NGOs, against people who are simply trying to feed people. And they're being targeted, according to the article. And it's a long article, and it's very detailed, and it gives both sides. But there is a lot of evidence that the people who are just there to feed people are being targeted and are dying. And many have died.
This is Rosie Starr on the Narrowsburg-Darbytown Bridge that connects Sullivan County, New York, to Wayne County, Pennsylvania. And as I'm walking now, there's a picturesque sunset going on right over the Big Eddy, Delaware River. The deepest part of the Delaware River is right here. The horizon is a beautiful contour wave of color. Blue sky, gray clouds, a soft sunset.
And thanks to Rosie Starr for that report. Members of the community will gather again tomorrow night at 5 on the Narrowsburg-Darbytown Bridge for this peace vigil. And a reminder to listen to Rosie Starr and Farm and Country tomorrow morning at 10. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Freezin' for a Reason. Special Olympics New York hosts the 4th annual Orange County Polar Plunge tomorrow. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we talk comfort food from around the world with the beloved Yotam Ottolenghi. And we learn about classic German cooking with the wonderful Louisa Weiss. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Did you know that Dolly Parton has written over 3,000 songs, including I Will Always Love You for Whitney Houston? And it also turns out that there are some impressive covers of Dolly songs by British and Irish folk singers and bands. So, please join me, Graham Rice, on the Wagglers and Monkeys here on Radio Catskill for covers of Dolly Parton songs on Sunday afternoon at 3.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The 2024 Orange County Polar Plunge is tomorrow. Attendees from across New York State will gather in Highland Mills to raise funds and awareness for Special Olympics New York athletes in the Hudson Valley region. Joining us now with more are Teresa Gilley, the Director of Development for Special Olympics New York in the Hudson Valley region, Eric Lunzer, the co-chair of the Orange County Polar Plunge, and athlete Will Smith. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Well, thanks for being here. Tell us more about this really popular and fun fundraiser, even though it's a little cold, for Special Olympics, Teresa.
It's a great event. It supports the athletes. All the money that gets donated actually goes directly to our athletes to offset costs of any expenses that we have for them to compete and train year-round. So it's very important for us to raise these necessary funds to continue our mission of not charging our family, caregivers, or the athletes any money to participate year-round.
Now, when you hear about these polar plunge events, I kind of just think, okay, people are just jumping in the water. This is pretty organized, though. How does this work in terms of teams and team captains and getting this excitement out there?
Oh, it's great. We have an online registration site. We accept donations and registrations day of on top. These great individuals go in and they have people sponsor them to jump. I don't know if you know, but the polar plunges are a law enforcement torch run event. And that's where Eric Lunzer comes into play. Go ahead, Eric.
Eric, tell us more.
Sure. Yes. I am a retired member of the New York State Police. I'm a transplant down here in the Hudson Valley. And then what I did was I got with Teresa 4 years ago when I saw that, you know, we could do this in Orange County, what we were doing in Western New York to raise funds for this worthy cause. We started just developing it and building it. And this is our fourth year doing it. And, you know, as we keep growing, we have milestones because this kind of event, the polar plunges, even though, you know, the law enforcement torch runs, you know, those that gets a lot of traction. These polar plunges are the bread and butter of the donation season for the Special Olympics, where this is where a lot of the money that the athletes use, local athletes here in the Hudson Valley, will use to compete, just like what Teresa was telling you. And how I like to advertise this event is, it is November, and I know some people, really, it was just 80 degrees yesterday, right?
Yeah, but yeah.
Right, but at the same time, if you're on the fence, if you don't know if you want to participate in like a February or a March polar plunge, where obviously they may be cutting holes in the ice, this is a polar plunge for you, that where you can always go, hey, I did a polar plunge. You don't have to say it was in November, but this is a polar plunge.
It's good for beginners, I guess.
Plunges, if you will.
Yeah. Good for folks who don't want to get that cold. I wanted to ask.
That is correct.
I wanted to ask Will. Will, what is your sport, and how does this this polar plunge help you achieve your sport initiatives?
So I compete year round throughout the year in various different sports, from floorball to track and field, softball, bowling, and it literally spans across the whole year. And just hearing all the great support that from awesome people like Eric and other members of our law enforcement torch run community have supported us year round, just so that we're able to have the opportunity to train and compete just like anybody else out there throughout the year. It's just truly special just to see it unfold and happen.
And Teresa, this polar plunge is dedicated to an athlete. Tell us about John Patrick Screen.
John Patrick Screen was I loved him. He, his world and his family's world revolved around Special Olympics. So when he passed at an early age, his mother and I got together And I felt like we needed to keep his mission, his love for Special Olympics alive. So I last year said that going forward, we will represent John Patrick's Green going forward for this plunge so we can recognize him. And we, like I said, keep him alive. And I know he'll be looking down at us every year at this time and with a big smile and happiness. And I know that. And we feel him when he's there. His mother and his family is just, they're an amazing group, and they'll do anything for Special Olympics still afterwards. So it's heartfelt and very heartwarming.
And so if I'm a first-time polar plunger, what can I expect?
Honestly, people get a little nervous, and it really isn't that scary. You can do also, you can walk in, you can crawl in, you can. I had an 82-year-old woman who had an athlete, and she raised over $5,000 to put a finger in to the water. So it's all up to the individual. We have divers there. So we have EMS there. So safety is number one. So you'll come in, you'll register, you'll sign a waiver. If you raise $150, you get a sweatshirt day of. And then there's festivities. We got food trucks. We got DJs. We got raffles. We have merchandise. There's a park for children. Actually, it's a family affair. So we welcome everybody. And again, it supports our athletes at Special Olympics New York. And we appreciate everything everybody does.
Let's remind folks who.
Very festive.
Yeah, it
very
sounds like it's a.
Event.
Yeah.
Let's remind folks how they can be involved and where to go.
Yes. Like for my team.
Yep. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that we have our own little themes that we do. I believe we have 13 teams, approximately 200 people signed up to do this.
Yep.
My team is going to be doing the Wizard of Oz theme. So we have people dressed
up
the Tin Man to Scarecrow, everybody. Even somebody's going to be wearing, they're going to be the Yellow Brick Road, and it's just a t-shirt that says, imagine I'm the Yellow Brick Road. You know, so you can get as elaborate as you want with these things. But yes, it's very festive.
All right, so registration starts in the morning. You can still register day of, and that's at 10, and then the plunge is at noon. Let's remind folks where they can go to get that information and where to go.
That would be great. If everybody can go to polarplungeny.org, then click on Orange County Polar Plunge, you'll get to the site. You can either register. Any donation, whatever it is never too small. Or you can come day of, Woodbury at the Reds. Please join us. Come to our athletes too. You know, we got many athletes jumping as well. So it's not just other folks. It's everybody coming as one, working as a team for excitement. My direct number is 845-262-6011 if anybody has any questions, I'm here to help every one of them.
And we should remind folks, Special Olympics New York is the largest state chapter in the country, serving more than 45,000 athletes across New York, also partnering with 300 schools statewide, doing great work. So good to support them. We've been talking to Teresa Gilley, Eric Lunzer, and Will Smith. They're freezing for a reason. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
No, thanks for having us.
Join us.
Yep, have a good plunge. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Have a good weekend, and thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Chatskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on-site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Do you believe in life after love? This week on Selected Shorts, we ask the question with heartbreaking and hilarious short stories about falling in love, taking the leap, consciously uncoupling, and moving on. I'm Meg Wolitzer. Join us.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, sunny and breezy, gusty winds, and excessively dry weather could result, or does, is resulting in a high fire threat. So be careful there, high 58. Clear, breezy tonight, low 32. For the weekend, cooler and breezy in the morning, a high of 47. And then for Sunday, a high 48 and a passing afternoon shower. Also, tomorrow night's low getting down to 25. On Points next. It's 11 o'clock.